I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I've sent a letter to Kristi Noem and to the Department of Homeland Security leadership asking them to pause all of their federal agent operations for the entirety of the Halloween weekend. I'm asking for basic human decency.
No, we're absolutely not willing to put on pause any work that we will do to keep communities safe. The fact that Governor Pritzker is asking for that is shameful.
As ICE refuses to pause its immigration raids in Chicago till after Halloween, federal border patrols replacing ICE at half their field offices nationwide. It's also been reported the Trump administration plans to build a new network of mass immigration jails that could hold up to 100,000 prisoners across the United States. Then the Israeli military's killing of Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh was intentional. So says a retired U.S. colonel who was the lead U.S. investigator. He's now speaking out.
On May 11th, 2022, Shireen Abu Akleh was killed intentionally by an IDF soldier. The evidence clearly backed that up, and yet we as the American people failed to hold the IDF accountable for that. The Biden administration failed to do things that needed to be done to hold them accountable, make Israel take responsibility for that action. This is something that needs to be addressed and continues to be an issue today.
Then to the mayoral race of Minneapolis and a candidate being called the Mamdani of the Midwest. Omar Fateh is the son of Somali immigrants and a democratic socialist.
There's one city for donors, developers, and insiders. The people with access. The people whose priorities always come first. And then there's the rest of us. Renters, transit riders, working class families, navigating a system that was never built for us.
We'll speak with Omar Fateh. He's seeking to unseat the incumbent mayor, Jacob Frey, who's running for a third term in office. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's continuing strikes on Khan Yunis in southern Gaza and neighborhoods of northern Gaza City, even as Israeli officials claim they're abiding by the U.S.-brokered ceasefire. The attacks came as Israel confirmed Hamas had returned the bodies of two Israeli hostages, while the Nasser Medical Complex in Gaza reported Israel had returned the bodies of 30 Palestinian prisoners, some exhibiting signs of torture. Al Jazeera's reporting a Palestinian has been killed by Israeli gunfire in Gaza City. Meanwhile, the Washington Post is reporting a classified report from the State Department's Office of Inspector General found Israeli military units committed hundreds of possible violations of U.S. human rights law in Gaza that would take years to investigate. It's the first time a U.S. government report has reviewed the scope of Israeli actions in Gaza under the Leahy laws, legislation that bars U.S. military assistance to foreign military personnel accused of human rights abuses. A new investigation details how the tech giants Google and Amazon violated their own terms of service in a lucrative contract with the Israeli government to provide cloud computing and AI services used during Israel's two-year assault on the Gaza Strip. The investigation by 972 Magazine, Local Call, and The Guardian finds that as part of the $1.2 billion deal known as Project Nimbus, Google and Amazon are obliged to secretly notify Israel if a foreign court orders them to hand over data stored on the company's cloud platforms. This comes just weeks after a campaign by current and former workers at Microsoft compelled the tech giant to cut off Israel's access to its Azure cloud computing platform, which Israel had been using to spy on millions of Palestinian civilian phone calls. The death toll from Hurricane Melissa has risen to 49. On Thursday, Jamaica's Prime Minister, Andrew Holness, shared images of the hardest-hit areas of Jamaica, showing homes lying in ruin amidst twisted corrugated metal, dangling power lines, flooded neighborhoods, and streets covered in mud. Holness says the southern beach town of Black River is almost totally destroyed. At least 19 deaths were recorded across Jamaica. Meanwhile, Haiti reported 30 deaths due to days of torrential rains from the hurricane. 20 others remain missing. On Thursday, Venezuela said it's sending aid to Jamaica and Cuba. Meanwhile, officials in Havana said they're open to receiving disaster assistance from the United States. More than 730,000 Cubans evacuated ahead of the storm. Many returned to scenes of destruction and an uncertain future.
Life before the cyclone was already difficult because we don't have resources. Here we're surviving however we can, with a lot of fear about what's to come. Because for today at least, we have food. But tomorrow, we don't even know what we're going to eat.
In the United Kingdom, officials at Buckingham Palace say Prince Andrew will be stripped of his royal titles and will vacate his home at the Royal Lodge in Windsor. He will now be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. This follows new revelations about the extent of Andrew's friendship with the late serial sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, and allegations by survivor Virginia Giuffre that Andrew forced her to have sex with him three times, beginning when she was 17. Giuffre died in April of an apparent suicide. Her family said Thursday she'd, quote, brought down a British prince with her truth and extraordinary courage, unquote. A recent poll showed 91% of Britons have a negative opinion of Andrew. This is London resident Harry Humphreys.
Oh, I'm happy he's got stripped of his titles, his royal titles as well. He should be kicked out of the country because, you know, these guys live off us. You know, we're the working class, we're the people in charge, basically.
Meanwhile, across the pond here in the United States, House Speaker Mike Johnson is continuing to refuse to seat Arizona Congressmember-elect Adelita Grijalva. She would be the final vote needed for the discharge petition demanding Congress release the Epstein files being held by the Department of Justice. The U.S. federal government shutdown has entered its 31st day. On Thursday, President Trump urged congressional Republicans to eliminate the Senate filibuster to pass a funding bill that would end the shutdown. Vice President J.D. Vance warned holiday travel could be a disaster if the shutdown continues. Meanwhile, food benefits for about 42 million Americans are set to expire this weekend as the Trump administration refuses to tap into the $5 billion contingency fund for SNAP, that Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. On Thursday, a federal judge in Boston signaled she would order the Trump administration to fund SNAP, saying, quote, Congress has put money in an emergency fund. It's hard for me to understand how this is not an emergency, she said. Meanwhile, several states, including Louisiana, New York, Oregon, Rhode Island, and Virginia, have declared states of emergency to disperse state funds for food assistance programs. And several other states have boosted funding to food pantries to mitigate the looming hunger crisis. This is Rizwan Hawkins-Jones, a sophomore at Georgia State University, a recipient of SNAP.
Your country is supposed to be supporting you, and the last thing you want to worry about is if you're going to have food on your table at the end of the night. If you're working every day, the main thing you want is food. You shouldn't have to worry about all these expenses, plus if you're going to eat or if your family's going to eat.
The Trump administration sharply reducing the number of refugees admitted annually into the U.S. to 7,500 people. Most of them will be white South Africans. That is a steep decline from last year's cap of 125,000 set under President Joe Biden. Sharif Ali, president of the International Refugee Assistance Project, said, quote, by privileging Afrikaners while continuing to ban thousands of refugees who've already been vetted and approved, the administration's once again politicizing a humanitarian program, unquote. Federal agents are actively using facial recognition technology in the field to identify people and their immigration status during stops that seem to have little justification beyond the color of someone's skin. That's according to a report in 404 Media, which cites several videos in which mass federal agents are seen using smartphones to photograph people after demanding they show ID. In this example, a Border Patrol agent confronted a pair of teenagers in Chicago.
If you just tell me that you were born here and give me an ID, you'll be good.
I was born here, but I don't got ID.
You don't have no ID?
No.
Can you do facials?
Can you do a facial? One of the masked federal agents said to another. It's not clear what smartphone app the agents were using. 404 Media previously reported immigration agents have been using Mobile Fortify, an app built on a database of 200 million images, which can return the subject's name, date of birth, alien number, and whether they've been given an order of deportation. In more immigration news, new video shows federal agents in Rockingham County, Virginia, violently arresting a mother driving her daughter to school after she failed to recite her Social Security number during an immigration stop. Video of the incident shows the 16-year-old daughter of Jakey Funes Andrade crying out as the agents tackle her mother to the ground, press her face down into the pavement, and handcuff her. Before the violent arrest, Funes Andrade reportedly showed agents her work permit, Social Security card, driver's license, and car registration, but they arrested her anyway. She was taken to the Harrisonburg Regional Jail. Her daughter said, quote, "I want this video out there because I want my mother home," unquote. Meanwhile, in Chicago, a federal judge on Thursday ordered Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bovino to appear for a deposition to explain federal agents' use of tear gas and other less lethal weapons against protesters who've taken to the streets to oppose the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. We'll have more on this story after headlines. A top U.S. military official, Major General Ronald Burkett, has ordered the National Guard of all 50 states, Washington, D.C., and U.S. territories to form, quote, quick reaction forces for riot control purposes. That's according to an internal Pentagon memo reviewed by The Guardian, which details how 23,500 troops will be trained in the use of batons, body shields, tasers, and pepper spray on crowds. The memo also says the Pentagon will deploy military trainers to all states and territories with the goal of making the quick reaction forces ready by January 1st, with each state reporting on its monthly progress. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has ordered the military to provide dozens of lawyers to the Justice Department for temporary assignments in Memphis and near the U.S.-Mexico border that could run through next fall. That's according to the Associated Press, citing a memo sent Monday to all branches of the military and the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, seeking to bolster the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. This follows the Pentagon's recent move to send up to 600 military lawyers to the Justice Department to serve as temporary immigration judges. The U.N. Security Council Thursday condemned the mass killings by the Rapid Support Forces in Al-Fashir in Sudan's North Darfur region. It comes as Sudan's government says the RSF has killed at least 2,000 people in the 3 days since the paramilitary group has seized control of the city. Here's Martha Ama Akyat-Pobi, the Assistant Secretary General of the U.N. for Africa.
Despite commitments to protect civilians, the reality is that no one is safe in Al-Fashir. There is no safe passage for civilians to leave the city. There are also reports of large-scale atrocities perpetrated by the Rapid Support Forces in Bara, in North Kordofan, following the recent capture of the city.
And in Brazil, protests erupted after a massive police raid on a drug gang in favelas in Rio de Janeiro that left 119 people dead. The favelas residents demonstrated against the use of excessive force by police and called on Rio's governor to step down. Earlier this week, over 2,500 law enforcement agents stormed the favelas, home to some 300,000 people, considered to be the headquarters of one of Brazil's most powerful organized crime groups. This is Graciele Fernandes do Carmo, the sister of a victim of the police operation described as the deadliest raid in Rio's history.
My brother wasn't a bum, you understand? My brother was 22 years old and had finished high school. He had a formal job, and so they destroyed him. They ruined my brother's life. They ruined our family. They destroyed our family.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is calling for federal agents to pause their immigration enforcement in Chicago until after Halloween, amidst widespread condemnation of chaotic and violent arrests, confrontations with residents.
I've sent a letter to Kristi Noem and to the Department of Homeland Security leadership asking them to pause all of their federal agent operations for the entirety of the Halloween weekend. I'm asking for basic human decency. I think their response will be revealing. They've disrupted everything for more than 2 months already. give the children and the families of Illinois a break.
Governor Pritzker also wrote in the letter to Noem, quote, "No child should be forced to inhale tear gas or other chemical agents while trick-or-treating in their own neighborhood," unquote. But on Thursday, DHS Secretary Noem rejected Pritzker's request. She was speaking from Gary, Indiana.
Absolutely not willing to put on pause any work that we will do to keep communities safe. The fact that Governor Pritzker is asking for that is shameful. And I think unfortunate that he doesn't recognize how important the work is that we do to make sure we're bringing criminals to justice and getting them off our streets.
This comes as a federal judge Thursday ordered the person at the center of much of Chicago's enforcement, Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bovino, to appear for a deposition to explain federal agents' use of tear gas and other less lethal weapons against protesters who've taken to the streets to oppose the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. Meanwhile, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem's replacing ICE leadership at half the country's field offices with Border Patrol officials in regions where President Trump's demanding more immigration raids and arrests. In recent weeks, CNN's reported the Trump administration plans to build a new network of mass immigration jails that can hold up to 100,000 prisoners by funneling billions of dollars through the Navy to help facilitate the construction. To talk about this and more, we're joined in Washington, D.C. by Aaron Reichlin Melnick, senior fellow at the American Immigration Council. Welcome back to Democracy Now, Aaron. Let's start with the plea from the Illinois governor, J.B. Pritzker, not to tear gas children while they're trick-or-treating. And the Homeland Security Secretary's response.
Yeah, what I think you see here is that Secretary Noem wants these mass deportation operations to keep going no matter the consequences, no matter the day, no matter the disruption that it has on American communities. And they are more and more aggressive as they expand the workforce and really try to make Chicago an example for the country so that people understand what is coming to other cities throughout the Trump administration.
Talk about what's happening, for example, right now in Chicago, and particularly talk about what it means that Border Patrol is replacing ICE at about half the field offices across the United States, and what exactly that means, and how Bovino, the head of CBP, has been called before a judge and another hearing next week.
Yeah, well, I think what it means is that the administration wants enforcement on the streets, immigration enforcement, to look more like what has happening in Chicago. Commander Bovino, or Chief Bovino, has been the one in charge of the Los Angeles raids. Then he was moved to Chicago. He's in charge of the Chicago raids. And that style of aggressive, militarized enforcement is something that the Trump administration loves because it plays very well for them among their base. You even see that they often bring videographers to these arrest operations themselves, masked and in camouflage uniforms, so that they can capture it and post these videos on social media. And the Trump administration believes that that kind of enforcement is the model that they want to pursue, because it lets them give this perception to their base that they are being more aggressive than ever before, than any previous administration, even than ICE itself was doing.
If you can talk about specifically how unusual it is, while a judge has stopped this for the moment, that the judge in Bovino's case said she wanted him to report her every day. That's not at the moment happening, but the issue of body cam and what is causing Judge Ellis's response.
Yeah, so Judge Ellis is presiding over a case about the use of riot control munitions, things like tear spray or pepper balls. Aggressive uses, aggressive munitions that are used to disrupt civil unrest. And what they've found here is that despite an order requiring ICE and their DHS and the Border Patrol, basically any component of this federal operation, to give people warnings before deploying riot control munitions, that it does appear that they are not doing that, or at least certainly not following the court order as she has wanted them to do. And so she called Bovino in because he is the one in charge of this operation. And she really said, you need to get a control of your officers, and said, I want to see you back in court every single day to talk about what's going on. Now, the Seventh Circuit has temporarily put a hold on that order, but it may go into effect once that case has a chance to be briefed by the Seventh Circuit.
And I wanted to ask you about CNN's report that the Department of Homeland Security is funneling $10 billion to the Navy in order to construct a sprawling network of migrant detention centers nationwide. The states expected to have these jails built in them, Louisiana, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Utah, and Kansas. Each of these immigration jails would hold up to 10,000 people, 100,000 overall, an expedited building of these jails.
Yeah, this is part of the funding that came in Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act. That law provided ICE $45 billion to spend on immigration detention over the next 4 years. Which, when you combine it with the annual appropriations that ICE gets through the normal budget cycle, could give ICE about $15 billion per year to hold people in detention. And by comparison, the entire budget of the Federal Bureau of Prisons is $8.4 billion. So we're looking at nearly twice the budget of the Federal Bureau of Prisons to be used solely on immigration detention. And to spend that money in 4 years to get the system up and running quickly as possible, it means tent camps. And tent camps are something that the U.S. military has a lot of experience constructing. So we have already seen one such facility go up on Fort Bliss in El Paso, formerly known as Camp East Montana. The Trump administration calls it the Lone Star Lockup. It is set to hold 5,000 people, and they are reportedly adding about 250 beds per week. And it's already holding more than 2,000 people, and that number is growing daily. So we are looking at a network of Camp East Montanas being built around the country in the next couple of years.
I wanted to ask you about a ProPublica report that finds more than 170 U.S. citizens have been detained by ICE at raids and protests across the country. More than 20 citizens were held in detention without being able to contact loved ones or a lawyer. ICE agents also arrested 130 citizens, including a dozen elected officials, for allegedly interfering with or assaulting officers. Those cases were dropped. This is Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem speaking during news conference in Indiana.
There's no American citizens have been arrested or detained. We focus on those that are here illegally. And anything that you would hear or report that would be different than that is simply not true and false reporting.
Aaron Reichlin-Melnick, your response.
Yeah, Secretary Noem is either ignorant of the facts or not telling the truth about the facts, because, of course, U.S. citizens have been arrested and detained by ICE. Now, sometimes that has been a deliberate arrest because a DHS officer believes the person is interfering with federal agents, but other times it's been because officers believed the person was an undocumented immigrant, largely because they were Latino. And we've seen this in Los Angeles, and we've seen this in Chicago, and we've seen this in other places around the country. That now that the Supreme Court has endorsed these so-called Kavanaugh stops, where ICE officers and Border Patrol agents can question people on the basis of their ethnicity or where they are or what language they're speaking, that U.S. citizens are being swept up in this, sometimes even when those citizens have real IDs available and ready to show people.
Let me ask you what happened in Rockingham County, Virginia. New video shows federal agents there violently arresting a mother, driving her daughter to school after she failed to recite her social security number during an immigration stop. Video of the incident shows the 16-year-old daughter of Jakey Funes Andrade, we're going to pick up the sound here, crying out as the agents tackle her mother to the ground, press her face down into the pavement, and handcuff her. Before the arrest, Funes Andrade reportedly showed agents her work permit, her social security card, driver's license, and car registration. But they arrested her anyway and took her to jail. What kind of recourse do people have?
Yeah, I haven't seen that video itself, so I can't comment on the specifics of what happened, but this is part of a broader pattern of officers really not caring to look at the paperwork people have or engage with them before these arrests are actually ongoing. Now, if that person is legally present, if they do have a right to stay here, then they could theoretically bring a lawsuit against the government to seek damages for an unlawful arrest. But those lawsuits are complicated, difficult, and time-consuming. And if the arrest was ultimately lawful but cruel, there may be little that she can do. I think this is why community support, access to counsel, getting people an opportunity to have a lawyer is so important at a time like this.
And let me ask you about asylum seekers and the dramatic cut right now in asylum seekers allowed in the United States. The Trump administration reducing the number of refugees admitted annually from 125,000 to 7,500, most of them white South Africans. Aaron.
Yes. So crucially, these are not asylum seekers. These are people coming in through the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program, which means they have already gone through a legal process overseas that has approved them as refugees to come to the United States legally with status on a path to a green card and eventually on a path to citizenship. And for 45 years, the U.S. Refugee Program has saved people from things like ethnic cleansing around the world. But now the Trump administration is trying to turn the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program into a new immigration program for white South Africaners and conservatives who they believe are being discriminated against because of their anti-migrant viewpoints. And that is just an abdication of the humanitarian work that the United States has done to so much success over the years, and a replacement with this ideological program intended to bring over like-minded conservatives and only like-minded conservatives to the United States.
Aaron Ragland Melnick, I want to thank you for being with us, senior fellow at the American Immigration Council, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. Next up, the Israeli military's killing of an American journalist, a Palestinian-American, Shireen Abu Akla, was intentional. So says a retired U.S. colonel who is the lead U.S. investigator. He is now speaking out. Stay with us.
My home, my home. I'll never fly away from here, 'cause that's my home. My home. Whatever I see in my dreams, that's my home. I stop trying to understand why I'm wrong. My home. I ain't gonna leave this place, 'cause that's my home. My home. Ooh, I'll never fly away from here, 'cause that's my home. My home. And whatever I see in my dreams, that's my home. Why I'm wrong. My home. Yeah, I ain't gonna leave this place, 'cause that's my home. My home. Yeah, yeah, I'll never fly away from here. That's my home.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. U.S. officials who closely examined the May 11th, 2022 shooting death of an American journalist, Palestinian-American Shireen Abu Akla, in the occupied West Bank, were deeply divided over the Biden administration's public conclusions, with some officials convinced that her killing was intentional. That's according to the New York Times, citing five current and former U.S. officials who worked on the case, including a career military policeman with 30 years' experience. Speaking publicly for the first time, Colonel Steve Gabovics said the U.S. government had soft-pedaled his office's findings to appease the Israeli government. He said he and his colleagues were left flabbergasted by the Biden State Department's statement, attributing Shireen